my counterpart in the House, Representative Krieger, Chair of the House Judiciary Committee. Representative Krieger and I and Senator Beyer have all been members of the meth work group along with Representative Greg McPherson. And it was really that work group that produced the product in front of you with the enormous help and assistance from Heidi Moad here, our staffer. And we had a hearing this morning on the other half of the meth package, House Bill 2485. It was a very lively discussion. I think probably this one will go a little bit faster than that one. although Senator Walker has entered the room. So anyway, with that, I will now open a work session on Senate Bill 907, Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Before you today, you have the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 907. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on covering the ground we've covered in previous hearings earlier this month, but I will just instead focus on the changes that the work group made after hearing testimony on June 8th and 9th. First of all, we clarified for the criminal mistreatment in the first degree and child neglect in the first degree that it is sufficient to either leave the dependent person, elderly person, or child in a place where a meth lab is occurring or has occurred and has not yet been certified as fit for use under the public nuisance and abatement laws. Because of some concerns raised by the Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, instead of the previous language which said preparation of a precursor substance for the unlawful manufacture of a controlled substance, we have more narrowly focused that to the grinding, soaking, or otherwise breaking down a precursor substance to really capture that idea of the chemical reaction as opposed to something like popping out pills from a blister pack. As to the sentencing pieces, or no, I'm sorry, on page 5, we changed the way that the mandatory reporters would have a duty to report, and that is that if a child is unlawfully exposed to a controlled substance and that subjects the child to a substantial risk of harm to the child's health or safety, we, you may recall, heard evidence or testimony from the Department of Human Services that the language surrounding drug-affected child has a very medical definition, and there were concerns that people would not be appropriately up to speed on what drug-affected meant, and so this covers, or this addresses that particular concern. As to the reporting or the allowing law enforcement to have access to law enforcement reports, we clarified, and that was in direct response to the ACLU's concerns that the protected health information needed to contain specific information regarding the child directly related to the alleged manufacture or use of methamphetamine. We clarified in the child visitation pieces that a court that change was made, but I will make sure it gets made on the other side. We asked for a change to be made that there would be this clarification of a court's ability to utilize all resources in dealing with parenting time. And it's just not exactly the way I sent it down, and I need to look at whether or not that appropriately addresses our concerns, and I will do that. The last piece was we eliminated the new classification that was in the Dash 3 amendments, and that was what I will refer to as the super substantial quantity classification. It was a 30 grams or more of marketable or ingestible methamphetamine, and it raised that to a level 9. After hearing testimony from several people, the work group determined that that was just not something that our state crime lab was prepared to deal with, or that it was really going to be something that would make a huge difference. So instead what we did was took into account the District Attorney's Association concerns and elevated all MCS methamphetamine cases where it is a chemical reaction or the breaking down, grinding, or otherwise breaking down a precursor substance from a level 4 up to a level 8 on the sentencing guidelines grid. Repeat offender statutes modeled after the repeat property offender statutes remain intact, except, of course, we took out the level 9 piece. And that reflects the changes from the dash 3s to the dash 5s.
Thank you, counsel. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the deletion of the level 9 that you referred to?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. The deletion of that, we had created that with the idea in mind that we would be capturing sort of the most serious offenders. However, there were concerns about the marketable or ingestible definitions and whether or not a purity test would be required in some way. The State Police Crime Lab does not, I don't believe, even could do a purity test. It's certainly not set up to do a purity test at this point. And so in order to have something like that, we would have had to probably fund at least one more criminalist at the State Police Crime Lab level. Additionally, I think that would have become an onerous thing for DAs to argue. And finally, I think, and we, the work group sort of knew this going in, the bulk of those quantity cases are in all likelihood going to be handled at a federal level in any event. And so really the practical effect was limited at best.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Including you, Representative Krieger, please feel free to participate fully. Thank you. Any questions? Okay, well, I've asked people in the audience. We have experts here who have helped us on this. If anybody, after hearing this summary, wishes to come up and address anything, they're welcome to do so. And if not, we will just continue. Representative Krieger, did you have any comments you'd like to make in discussion of Senate Bill 907-5?
I'm sure of the fact that when we were developing the bill, it was a almost line-by-line process out of all of those 35 to 40 bills that Heidi brought before us. And then we pretty well covered each item line-by-line to get to where we were. And we went back, I believe, on 4 separate occasions and re-examined the conclusions that we had come from to verify that, hey, we were still there or we made changes. And Heidi talked to you about the changes. So I think it was a very deliberate, inclusive process of all 4 caucuses and the public when we had the open process. And I think it's worked real well.
Yeah, and I would like to echo that as a member of the work group. It was a very focused, bipartisan process, and I feel pleased with the outcome. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Krieger. I'd like to just add to that that we didn't only include 4 caucuses, we include 5 caucuses. It was at most of our meetings, a representative from the governor's office was with us also. And I think that's important because this is a bicameral process, but we have to get buy-in from the executive department before we can do something. I would also like to thank, besides the chairs of these 2 committees, I'd like to thank Senator Pozanski. He did the vast majority of the work on Senate Bill, was it 912? And which has already passed the Senate. And we basically, when it comes to precursors, not basically, we took that bill verbatim and inserted it into the, I think that's actually in the 2485 bill, but Senator Pozanski did an enormous amount of work early on in the session to get us to that point before we could even move forward. So I'd like to thank Senator Pozanski for the work he did in to help us get started.
Thank you very much for pointing that out. And there are people here in the audience who have helped out as well, but Heidi Moad just did incredible work keeping us on task, focused, and just presented things in a very clear fashion that allowed us to make policy decisions in a rational way, which I know seems strange for this process at times, but it was a very good process, and Senator Representative Krieger.
And now you've spoken to Heidi, and I should have in our meeting that we had a little time problem. I don't know if I've dealt with anyone who could remember things off the top of her head, you know, page and number where it was, and I'm fumbling around trying to find it. She said, it's over there. And so her intellect, you know, and I kid her father about, hey, this is a genetic abnormality. I kind of get that in whenever I can, but I really do appreciate Heidi.
Well, and we also have a representative from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, so I will just say this woman deserves a raise when she returns, because the experience that Heidi got is as part of the drug unit. You'll get that word back, right? The experience that Heidi brought as a former member of the drug enforcement team was just invaluable as we worked on this. Right. It was, I don't know what we would have done without it. So the
such a love fest.
I know, Senator Walker.
Yeah, I do have a question, though.
Yes, please.
Outside of the love fest, which is wonderful. I'm really glad that we all came together, and there aren't as many issues in this bill as there were in the other one. But the question I had, and maybe Ms. Moed addressed it while I had my attention diverted, but we did have some concerns about the 30 grams or more of methamphetamine when marketable or ingestible, and did you discuss how that got changed to reflect the concern people had?
Senator Walker, yes, I did, and in fact, what the work group decided to do, and I note my SMS at the top part at least did not reflect that, but the body of it does. We removed that new classification altogether and instead decided to just classify any manufacturing of methamphetamine that involved chemical reactions would go up from a what is currently a level 4 to a level 8.
Which is what, Madam Chair, which is what my notes reflect, that law enforcement wanted them all level 8. I think we had it previously at level 6, and they wanted them all at level 8. And so your SMS, and that's why I asked you this question, your SMS, you slipped up. Is there a demerit here?
I did. There goes my attention to detail right out the window.
So, you know,
I'm in trouble today.
I know. I'm sorry. So we are not creating the new sentence enhancement. Okay.
Senator Walker, we are not. Thank you.
How is that
for belaboring the point?
If that is all that you messed up, that's pretty darn good. Okay. I'm telling you.
So that's what I love about this committee. You can't get anything by them. Whatsoever. Between Senator Walker and Senator Beyer, I'll tell you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Starr.
You know, I've been, from the earliest part of this session, impressed with the work and the bipartisanship of this effort, the determination to do something and to do it right and attack this problem. As we pass this on, it's with the very strongest of recommendations that we adequately fund this program. So the work that we've done here is reflected in the operations in the communities in a way that truly makes a difference. And with your permission, I would move the -5 amendments.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Senator Starr has moved the -5 amendments to Senate Bill 907. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Starr, we're looking for a motion to move this to the Budget Committee.
Understood, and I move Senate Bill 907-5 amendments to the Senate Budget Committee with a strong due pass, due fund recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 907 as amended to the Senate Budget Committee with a very strong due pass recommendation and a recommendation for funding. Any discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that note, and I don't know how many other members of this committee have received this, but this is a memo sent from the four of us on the work group to the leadership in both the House and the Senate. And it's on prioritizing, and have you all seen this?
No.
If not, then you shouldn't get a copy of it.
I'd be happy to distribute a copy to the members. I did not.
The last thing we did in our work group was we prioritized our changes as to what we think needs to, is the most important to the least important. But I think the first, actually it's the second sentence in this memo, summarize it, and I'll read that only. It is extremely important to all of us that you understand that we prioritize these items reluctantly because we believe that the package should be funded in full. And I think that needs to go on the record, but we were asked to prioritize these items, and that we did not want to because we think they're all equally important. So it's important that the four of us, plus all the members of both the House and the Senate Judiciary Committee, now work with the leadership and the budget committees to get these packages funded.
Thank you, and I will be working very closely with Senator Gordley, who is chair of the Senate Budget Subcommittee on Public Safety. And if there are little technical things that need to be resolved, we will find a way to make that happen within our process. But I appreciate the opportunity to move this ahead today. We're running out of time. So is there any other discussion, Senator Walker?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate all the good work we did in this committee because we all are very well aware of the problems this has created. And, you know, I came into the building in 1999 and we started dealing with methamphetamine issues. And I know in 01 we did a lot of things to make it more difficult for parents to keep their children once they've subjected them to the scourge of methamphetamine, and we're doing some more about that. But what I want to emphasize is that it's not just going to take the states to do this alone. We've done a lot of work here, but we really have to have the federal government involved in this partnership, and they've so far until recently ignored it because it has been limited to the West Coast. But the scourge of methamphetamine has moved across the country, and they can't ignore it any longer. And I just really want us to continue to work with our federal partners on funding for drug courts, which we've clearly seen in all the testimony we've had that that's the number one treatment method for addressing methamphetamine. So while we do good work here, I want to continue to press our federal partners to...
And Senator Walker, when you do get a copy of our memo on the prioritization, the drug courts is top priority in recognition of that. We, Representative Olson has entered the room, and please feel free to come up and join us. This is a joint judiciary opportunity.
We're having a look.
Thank you. Representative Krieger.
We're doing all our kumbayas, whatever they call them. I think everybody thought at the beginning of the session, boy, Krieger's going to chair judiciary in the House side, and Burdick on the Senate. This is going to be a show to watch, you know, fire and ice. And the other day we were referred to in the paper as the odd couple. But we made a commitment that never wavered, that guns, abortion, K through 12, property rights, no other issue was going to interfere with getting this package out of this building. We can apply that to everything we do. Her and I can fight over other things, but we come together, and I think we've learned to respect one another, and that should carry on, hopefully, into the next session and some projects that her and I are already talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Krieger. And I certainly echo those sentiments. It's been a very rewarding experience all the way around, and with the committee, both committees. Is there any other discussion? Senator Whitsitt.
Since Representative Olson came in, I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the what I think is one of the missing links here. And I think this committee's done a wonderful job, particularly the four of you have done and Heidi have done gone beyond the pall to get this done. I really do. But the part to me that is missing is the interdiction part. And I know that Representative Olson has a bill coming forward has bill of civil forfeiture, and I wonder if we could just talk about that for a minute.
I'd be happy to. Procedurally, I think we need to finish discussion on this motion and dispense with that, and then I'd be happy to open the discussion. Is there any other discussion on the motion? Okay, objections. So ordered. Off it goes. Yay.
Woo-hoo. Get your life back.
So, Representative Olson, you have been requested to summarize what's happening in the great world of forfeiture. If you choose to. You don't have to because you were not warned.
Okay. No, actually, Madam Chair, I'm prepared. Not that Sarah wasn't knew that. But,
well, see, he's been having an appointment with me, an ongoing appointment for the last 2 days, but he keeps standing me up, so he's all ready to go. So we don't have to have our appointment, Representative.
Thank you, Senator Walker.
We're all so busy and on the floor, so I'm anxious to hear what you have to say.
I really apologize for standing you up, though.
I know.
So I'll get that out of the way.
Representative Olson, before you start, Senator Ringo has entered the room, and I wanted to ask for unanimous consent to allow Senator Ringo to vote on the Senate Bill 907, the motion to refer Senate Bill 907 as amended to the Senate Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? So ordered. Senator Ringo, how do you vote?
Aye.
Senator Ringo votes aye. We will now close the work session on Senate Bill 907-5.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry, Representative.
Well, Madam Chair, thanks. Just real quick review of what House Bill 3457 looks like, a snapshot view of its civil asset forfeiture. You're aware, and I think the majority of the committee is that Representative Krieger had asked me at the very beginning of the session to take a look at seeing what we could do with civil asset forfeiture, which had been removed as a result of ballot measure 3 about 4 years ago. And here, several months back, the Oregon Supreme Court heard testimony in regards to the constitutionality of measure 3 as it applied toward the more than one subject rule matter. So as a result of that, what I did was I went back and I took a look at what the civil forfeiture laws were that existed 4 years ago, and then moved them forward with several work committees in developing a modified view of civil forfeiture that I felt would probably work best for us today in our society, taking consideration of what the public wanted as a result of Measure 3. And with that, what some of the things that had been placed into it was for disbursement of asset proceeds, we reinstated the portion for a certain percentage going back to Asset Forfeiture Oversight Council, also a percentage to illegal drug cleanup, which is basically the DEQ cleanup. And we're having a serious problem right now in our state for cleanup, for especially the narcotic teams across the state. And from my experience in the past, when Measure 3 had been implemented a few years back, the narcotic teams would have to depend on DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration, for the help with that, for cleanup. 20% of it will go to drug courts and programs, and then 10% goes to relief nursery. But the neat thing about that is it really targets restoration toward families, because the majority of our families today are struggling with someone that they know, whether it be a neighbor or friend or family member, that is struggling with methamphetamine. So these things are really targeted toward the restoration of the family and that individual, and they've proven to be very successful. Then it also identifies disbursement and to the rest of the proceeds to law enforcement to combat narcotics and dangerous drugs in our state, but it gives some specific guidelines as well. The key issue that drove Measure 3 dealt with the real property issue, houses, land, structures, buildings, those type of things. And so what we did in the process of that is, and what this bill does, is identify elevating the burden of proof to clear and convincing. And then also the persuasion of burden of proof is shifted over to the state. Those were two key pieces that changed that, and I believe that actually provides a better protective measure for the public, but also provides a great tool for combating and supporting what the two meth packages from the Senate here as well as the House earlier this morning are trying to do. Now, to answer the question that Senator Wisdom asked about for interdiction, the obviously law enforcement can stop someone out on the roadway and detain them if they have reasonable suspicion that a violation of law has been committed. and that's pretty low. But to search something, you've got to come to an elevation of probable cause to have developed that. And to just randomly stop a vehicle and then all of a sudden to start searching it, our Supreme Court has found that that's unconstitutional. So there's nothing wrong with talking to somebody like what we had talked about, Senator and I, a police officer to tell a driver that there's possible suspicion that there might be, you know, carrying narcotics in the vehicle or something similar to that, to ask for permission, consent to do that. There's absolutely nothing that prohibits an officer from doing that. So from that point forward, what this bill does and provides is the issue with the Fugitive Disentitlement Doctrine. And that would be the issue where if, in fact, let's say $40,000 were found under the front seat of a vehicle, and then there was also 5 pounds of some high-grade marijuana or methamphetamine in the back trunk, that could be seized in that environment, in that situation. Also, then, what would happen as a result of the Fugitive Disentitlement Doctrine is that if that individual who was arrested as a result of that situation fled the state because possibly they lived in another state or something, that as soon as the court gave action toward a warrant, then that property would be subject, and that could help out, I think, probably what you're thinking of, Senator, with the whole idea of interdiction.
Thank you. Would you entertain questions if there are any?
Sure.
Okay. Anybody have questions?
No, I'm not sure if there are questions for Representative Olson or not, but I do want to make some clarification on the statements that I heard. First of all, civil forfeiture was not removed by Measure 3. Actually, what Measure 3 did was require a conviction prior to the actual forfeiture of the property of the individual. Civil forfeiture was still in the books. It just requires that conviction beforehand. What happened afterwards is that the interested parties in 2001, when I wasn't here, I did sit in on a couple of the original work groups, actually came up with a new process called criminal forfeiture, and they basically circumvented some of the requirements under the civil forfeiture as to what the proceeds could or couldn't be used for, and that was agreed to because it was something that was separate, and Measure 3 was specifically limited to civil forfeiture with the thought and anticipation that you would in fact potentially see criminal forfeiture evolve because of that, and that's what happened. The Supreme Court has heard the argument. They have not made a final decision at this point. We do have an appellate court decision that has said that the initiative as it was presented to the voters was unconstitutional, reversing what the circuit court had ruled at the trial level. What the public wanted and what the polling clearly showed was they wanted before an actual forfeiture of any property, real or personal property, that they wanted to have that conviction to occur, because most people believe and have thought that before the government could actually take ownership of someone's property based on criminal activity, that they had to get convictions under civil forfeiture prior to Measure 3 and what is proposed in this. There doesn't have to be any charges ever filed, let alone any conviction. The distribution of funds, I think it's very noteworthy as to where those funds could be distributed, but we also have to realize that the current bill calls for all costs to come off the top. And based on the process that was used in one county, they determined that about 85% of the money that was coming in would go toward those costs, and leaving only about 15% to be distributed to these different percentage and different worthy causes. Under the current bill, the real property, it's true that it would require the government to have a clear and convincing evidence that the allegation occurred. And I'll give you an example, Madam Chair. If you had a control buy on a piece of property, and the government would have to come in and show that there was, in fact, a buy of narcotics on that property. Once they've shown that by clear and convincing evidence, then the burden will go to the claimant, who is the owner of the property, have to file a claim to rebut that, to show some sense of innocence defense, that they had no knowledge that this was going on. So it's not quite as clear, and it's not as safeguard as a conviction is. Regarding the... I think there's definitely some other aspects that you'll see through this process as the bill moves forward, that you'll see where I think the parties, interested parties on both sides, hopefully will be able to accommodate the needs of what we need to make certain that we have safety within our communities, that we deal with those who are violating the law accordingly, and at the same time safeguard innocent owners' property, and not allow that to be basically going back to what it was before Measure 3, and have a removal, having, I guess, the disposition of property without some type of greater check and balance that the voters clearly stated that they wanted through that vote. And regarding the separation of the two issues that were or the, before the court is basically whether or not, besides having a conviction, before you actually have the actual forfeiture, it was basically the use of that money in the sense of having a prohibition that law enforcement would not be able to use that money for their own purposes within the context that had previously been done. So those are some issues I think that you'll continue to see through this process. And my goal and my hope is that we will be able to reach an agreement that will in fact provide what I believe the voters of this state wanted and what I believe they still want based on input that I've received of making certain that we hold those accountable for those criminal wrongdoings, but at the same time making sure innocent owners do not lose their property without having some just nexus to that occurring, and that the burden stays with the government before an actual forfeiture. Neither way would the actual seizing of the property be impacted. Clearly, law enforcement has a duty, I believe, to actually take control of that property and making certain that it's not continued to be used for illegal means. But at the same time, I do believe that the government has a obligation to basically prove what they're alleging and not require the shifting of the burden back to the individual to disprove something where they're not even criminally charged.
Appreciate that comment. Just on one point, I think there's been some confusion as to where the drug court money would come from, whether it would come off the top or not. The intent, and I've talked to Representative Olson, is that it come off the top. So at least on that point, there's agreement that the costs don't skim off the top.
That would be wonderful, but the way the bill currently is written, it says cost first.
Yeah, and that was my reading as well, but that...
No, I disagree with that. It comes right from the very top, I mean, from the cream, so... I'm sure if I might just... I want to... As Senator Prozanski, I don't want to get into a debate here, an argument or anything like this, but there's a couple points that I need to share as well. This bill was created law by the legislative body back in 1989, and it withstood several constitutional challenges to the Supreme Court here and weathered each one. That the Supreme Court felt that it was, in fact, a good law. It was probably the tightest asset forfeiture laws that we had in the nation at the time, but we lose it. Measure 3 basically wanted three things done. First, it wanted a conviction. Second, it wanted clear and convincing evidence before seizure was completed, and that by showing that, and law and the state had to show this, was that the instrumentalities or proceeds were assets from drug money. And then the third piece was that no proceeds would go to the police. If we stay on track with where we're at right now, with what exists, then the two meth packages that we just passed today are going to be in trouble. The other thing, too, that if House Bill 3457 does not move and should not and should fail, and the Supreme Court also, I mean, I know I'm speaking to the choir here, but should it not pass, and the Supreme Court make the decision that, in fact, they affirmed the decision from the Court of Appeals that Measure 3 was unconstitutional, we return back to what is on the books for civil asset forfeiture.
Unless we renew the sentence. I'll give Senator Pazansky one last opportunity. And then, yes, there we go.
Well, I just have a comment that's not really germane to the Pazansky versus Olson debate, but a kind of a different issue on the forfeiture, and that is I've had an interest in finding ways to clamp down on people who drive without automobile insurance. I think it's a big problem. One of the problems we have is the difficulty in seizing cars, impounding cars, and disposing of cars. And I've talked to people about this, and I get ambiguous answers as to whether a conviction is required to dispose of the car or not. And just for purposes of working on that issue, I would like to work with Representative Olson and Senator Pazansky to see, regardless of what other provisions might prevail, that we can make sure that the process is in place so that if somebody is stopped for driving without insurance, that if there's a reasonable time where they can't demonstrate insurance, say 60 days, then that car may be disposed of. And that's not the meth issue, it's not the drug issue, but it plays into the forfeiture issue.
And we've talked about that before, and actually, Senator Ringo, you'll probably have a good opportunity, because despite my best efforts to have this debate in Senate Judiciary, this bill indeed has been referred to Rules, and Senator Ringo is the only member of this panel on the Rules Committee. So. So you'll have fun with this one, Senator Ringo, but you'll be seeing a lot of us on this committee before your committee, including Representative Olson. So any other comments for the good of the order?
All I'll say in response is that I'm working on amendments such I think will accomplish a lot of the goals that Representative Olson wants to accomplish that I want to accomplish, but at the same time maintain the integrity of innocent until proven guilty.
I appreciate that, and I will work with anyone to make sure that we get something through this session. Any other comments? Discussion? Senate Judiciary is adjourned.
Why don't you stop that, Rodney? Good.